This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Michigan Radio's latest Artisan of Michigan takes us to the east side of Detroit. We're at one of Detroit's oldest companies. Well, actually, these days, it's a nonprofit, but doing the same thing it has since the very early part of the 20th century. This is Puabic, the pottery and tile maker admired and loved by many in Michigan. Steve McBride is the executive director of Puabic.
Puabic was founded in 1903 by Mary Chase Perry, later Mary Chase Perry Stratton. She became really well known as a china painter, so she would kind of paint overglaze enamels on French china.
The person who later became her partner was at first her neighbor. Horace Calkins was a dentist who developed kilns to fire porcelain teeth for dentures.
And he found out that his neighbor was using one of his kilns to fire her china painting and realized, oh, here's a business opportunity.
He hired her to travel around and sell his kilns to other china painters and artists.
She learned a lot, and you know, at that point she was getting kind of bored with china painting and came back and said, hey, Horace, you want to go into business? And so they started a pottery.
First, in 1903, it was in Culkin's basement at his house in Brush Park. They quickly outgrew that space and moved to the current building, which was built in 1907. It's changed and expanded from there. One area of the current building is still being used exactly as it was 110 years ago. It houses a line shaft-driven clay mixer managed by Kevin Kwiatkowski. We took a look inside.
It's been here since 1909, since the first expansion of this building. We put in, to mix clay, we put in around 255 gallons of water and 2,300 pounds of dry material into this mixer.
That will make two big batches a day. When he's not filling the mixer or squeezing the excess water out of clay so it's usable, he's in the newest addition to the building where the clay is pressed...
Oh, that's what you mean by mallet.
Mm-hmm. ...or pounded into molds. There are dozens and dozens of molds on the shelves. The master mold maker, Sherilyn Hunter, says there are others that are much older.
The originals are in the basement, locked away. The way we achieve the molds that you see here is to go down and get the original mold, press one, bring back its original detail, make new masters of that, and then multiples from there.
So if I own one of these really beautiful houses from the 1920s in Detroit and they've got Puabic tile everywhere, you probably could duplicate what they bought from the original mold.
Yeah, sometimes we can. We don't have all of the original molds because that's just probably a massive amount. But we have reproduced designs from finished installations, too.
Just sure, right. A few. You need one tile and you can start...
Yeah, I mean, you get an image, and then, yeah, it's drawn, it's sculpted, it's made from scratch. And or sometimes, believe it or not, I do find the original mold in the basement and bring that up and start the process again.
The trick of making a mold is making sure the clay can be removed freely without tearing or damaging the image. That means something the designers make might not quite work when clay hits the mold. It's Hunter's job to make the mold work, but keep it as close to the original design as possible.
I don't claim to be an artist, but I like to do things with my hands. So this is the way to do it. And it's something different every time we get original designs. We have... We're problem solving constantly and trying to figure out how to create something. So it's fun. It's frustrating when you're trying to figure it out, but once it's all finished and you see the finished product, it's a really cool thing to see.
After drying, the clay is taken to the next step. If it's more intricate and needs a lot of color, it might be taken to Leo Kopack.
Today I'm hand painting, and this is a historic tile that Mary Chase Perry Stratton designed, so it's one of the few older ones that we carry on and keep doing. And this is a peacock, and what I'm doing is using this bulb glazing technique where we fill this little bottle up with glaze, and there's a needle at the end of it, so you can kind of pinpoint where you're trying to get the glaze to go.
How long does it take to learn to do that well?
You know, you can jump into it and do it, but to do it well and, like, efficiently would be, like, the word to say, because, like, I don't know, when I first started doing this, it would take me, you know, hours and hours to do these, and I could still do it decently, but now I can kind of run through a bunch of them a lot faster, and still takes quite a while, and it's a lot more tedious of a glazing technique, but I've gotten better and better at it with time, for sure.
It still takes a full day of work to do the glazing on six of these peacock tiles, which are 6 inches by 10 inches. If the dried clay is a vessel of some kind, it might simply be dipped into a glazing material. Jose Araniva Gomez finished grad school and has been working at Puabic for about a month.
What I'm doing, I'm lining the inside. It's what we do. We pour glaze inside, just pin it a couple of times so we get an even coat inside, and then just pour out the excess. And then for these mugs, we dip the top part, and then we just give it, let them dry for a few hours, and then we're going to go back and glaze dip them, which means like we're just going to hold them and then dip them into a different glaze.
These glazes are different than the ones used in 1907. Alex Thullen is in charge of developing today's glazes to match the colors associated with Puabic products. Why not use the original formulas?
Everything at that period of time was lead-based, as was, you know, every ceramic manufacturer. It was a really common, cheap, effective material to use. But, you know, times change, our understanding of health and safety changes. So all of the glazes that we use are new recipes, and they've been reformulated over the years so that we can achieve kind of the look and the feel and the warmth of those historic glazes, but using materials that are safe to work with by today's standards.
After glazing, the Puabic tiles or vessels are sent to the kilns. The kilns used to be brick-lined, labor-intensive, and didn't hold the heat all that well, which was fine in the winter, but during the summer the temperature would get up to 120 degrees. Chris Mays says today, efficient kilns are a lot easier to deal with.
Once that program is saved in there, we really don't have to do much else other than kind of set it and forget it. They are all connected to the internet, so if anything goes wrong, we can monitor them from home.
So there's an app for that?
There is an app for that, that's for sure.
Let me ask you about how hot these get. I assume there's different peaks for different glazes.
That's
What's
right.
the hottest?
Well, the hottest that we go to is about 2,400 degrees Fahrenheit. And so for any ceramics that you do, you're generally not going to go much hotter than that when it comes to tiles, pottery, things like that.
Even with several additions to the 1907 building, Puabic still needs space. Across the street, Jefferson Avenue, we visit a building on City of Detroit Water Park property to watch Nicole Morocco at the Potter's Wheel.
This is the Puabic vessel making, and I just finished making one of our large harvest bowls. It's about 7 pounds of clay, and it ends up being about, what, 14 inches wide, I think? Oops. This one's 15 inches wide is what they end up being.
Generous, right?
And Josh is working on cleaning some of our slip cast pieces.
Why are you guys over here all by yourselves?
Oh, our production needs are greater than the space we have across the street. So we rent this building from the city.
Well, it's kind of a cool building, firehouse.
It is, yeah. We're in an old fire station. It was built in 1914. The city never actually used it. By the time they finished it, it was too small for the trucks.
It had been designed for horse-drawn fire engines.
So they used it as storage, and then in the 60s, two sisters had a little arts and crafts school that they ran out of here, where kids would make little balsa wood boats and kites, and they had a little wood shop. Every once in a while, somebody will ring my bell and tell me they used to take classes here.
So this building's built for craft, it sounds like.
It was.
On the second floor of the fire station, Puabic employees are given space for a personal studio. Each person receives a certain amount of clay to pursue their own work. They have a contest with outside potters each year. There's an exhibit of the winners and the other entries in the main building. Puabic also offers classes, and it even has a couple of portable kilns to do demonstrations for the public at events. Steve McBride, the executive officer, says people in Michigan are fascinated with Puabic.
People, I think, just respond to, like, the maker aspect of it. I mean, that's, you know, Puabic was founded the same year as Ford Motor Company. So when, you know, Ford was inventing the assembly line and, like, you know, everything was speeding up. And I think, you know, the arts and crafts movement was reaching its peak in America at the time. And it was all about, like, you know, the hand of the maker and about kind of rediscovering the joy in, like, you know, handcraft. And I think that's always been the thing that people responded to. And I think today it's, you know, it's as strong as ever.
And Puabic has become a part of Michigan's legacy, especially in Detroit.
You know, I love the fact that now you can go down Woodward Avenue and you can see, you know, tile work spanning over 100 years, you know, from the Guardian Building, you know, the outside of that to, like, and the DIA and the public library. But then, you know, going up into the 80s and you got the People Mover stations, and 2000 is Comerica Park. And just, you know, a couple of years ago we did Little Caesars Arena and all the Q Line stations. So it's like this sense of, you know, it is a piece. We like to say it's part of the fabric of the city.
That's why, collectively, Puwabik is our latest Artisan of Michigan. This is our last Artisan of Michigan. We've been bringing you this occasional series for 3 years now. It all began as a conversation between Mercedes Mejia and me. And Stateside's executive director, Joe Lindstroth, said, sure, do it. With a lot of logistical help from Lindsay Scullin, I got to visit blacksmiths, a broom squire, and a Native American black ash basket maker. I talked to a cobbler, a cooper, a clockmaker. You've heard woodworkers, a weaver, and metal workers on this program, a stonemason, a sign painter, a spoon carver, and a steampunk jewelry maker. Craftspeople in stained glass and glass blowing, a chairmaker, a chopper motorcycle builder, and people who make guitars, mandolins, pipe organs, trumpets, drums, marimbas, and replicas of early pianos. There were others, 48 in all, and every one of them has made an indelible impression on me. I hope you've been impressed by some of their work as well. You can find all of the Artisans of Michigan by visiting michiganradio.org and search for Artisans. Support for arts and culture coverage comes from the Michigan Council for the Arts and Cultural Affairs.